Hey, welcome to IKEA, where even this desk is circular.
Huh. How so? Looks pretty rectangular to me.
It's because we're always looking to repair, reuse, and relove our products, like buying back your IKEA items for store credit. Or shop our as-is section for great deals. You can even order free spare parts. Get on the circular path for a more sustainable future.
Still a rectangle.
Get started at IKEA-USA.com/circular. Visit IKEA-USA.com/circular for as-is information and buyback and resale terms and conditions. Spare parts not available for all products.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
First things first, everyone. I am Jenna Wolf. That is the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. That is Nick Wright. It is a spicy Friday today. Lots to talk about.
Let's get into it.
Jim's
right now, you two might be the only two members of our staff that I haven't yelled at this morning.
Oh, good.
These 11 p.m. Eastern start times
Laker games is making
me tense. Last Friday, you didn't see it. See, I yelled at Jenna irrationally.
Yep.
The today, Dusty caught a stray. Next 3 hours, though.
Let's have a great show. We're only like four games into the NBA season.
You know, so I have a broken
LeBron
knuckle.
LeBron and the Lakers are stringing wins together. Aaron Rodgers finds himself a big underdog on Sunday, and Deshaun Watson is back. That's where we start Thursday Night Football on Fox. Brock Osweiler and the Dolphins taking on his former team, the Texans, and what a night for that guy, Deshaun. Coming off the lung injury, finding Will Fuller for the 73-yard bomb, his longest touchdown pass in his career. That's the good news. Bad news, Fuller had to leave what the Texans are calling a torn ACL. One possession game in the fourth. Watson goes deep again, finds DeAndre Hopkins for the 49-yard touchdown. Nuke finish with two scores. Deshaun goes 16 of 20, 239 yards, five touchdowns. Texas wins their fifth straight, 42-23. Here's Deshaun Watson after the game.
And this offense can be very, very explosive. We can, do a lot of good things, put a lot of points on the board. So once, we're all on the same page and everyone's clicking and, we don't have any turnovers and no penalties, we can be very, very explosive. And that's what we showed tonight.
All right, see, does it look like Deshaun Watson is back after this win last night? Put together quite a game.
Well, you'd like to be able to see the young quarterbacks be able to play an efficient game like this, especially when you have to watch the flow of the game. Because the game, halftime was a, back and forth game. It could go either way. One play could turn it for the Dolphins. One play could have turned it for the Titans. And you'd like to, with Jenna, I was like, Jenna,
it's the
Texans.
No one wants to acknowledge
Texans. I'm on the Titans here at 6:32. But this game could have gone either way, and I'd like to see young quarterbacks that it can play in this type of environment, and they don't have to throw the ball 40 times. But they can be efficient with a limited number of throws, perfect conditions, not bad weather, but because of the flow of the game. We don't know when the quarterback's going to have to throw 40 times, but you'd like to have the option as a coach to be able to see your young quarterback and other people support him. Their running attack supported their quarterback. So you shouldn't have Deshaun. We don't want him to be Superman every week, all right? There's sometimes that he should be supported by his defense, by the running game, by the deep passing game. So they didn't have to have a lot of attempts. That's what I enjoyed seeing. Only 20 attempts, 16 completions. You have 16 completions, you throw five touchdowns. That's a hell of a day.
More touchdowns than incompletions, which is in no matter what level of football you're playing, you'll take that every time you can. Now, here's what I'm seeing with Deshaun. He trusts his knee again. Like, that, I think, is what you're getting at, because he is not afraid when it's being presented to him. Now, with that weak offensive line for the Texans on the rollouts, okay, I got to go run. And he is what he is doing smartly this week that he hadn't done previously is, I got to go run, and then I got to get down. I don't need to fight for 20 yards. I can slide at 15 yards. And you saw, it's really unfortunate for the Texans that Will Fuller looks like he tore his ACL, because he is a perfect complement to what is, I'm very comfortable saying, a special football player in DeAndre Hopkins.
Yeah.
DeAndre Hopkins, Hopkins can do just about everything well. The one thing Hopkins doesn't have is elite straight line speed. That's what Will Fuller added on the opposite side. So the fact that he might have torn his ACLs, unfortunate for them, but that's what this offense can be. Deshaun Watson looking a lot like Clemson Deshaun Watson. That's what we saw last year in the six-game sample before he hurt his knee. You're starting to see that come back.
And it's something you said all along, that a true recovery period from a torn ACL is not a year, but more like a year and a half, which puts us right here, and you saw him feel so much more comfortable last night. Okay, so now the Texans have won five in a row. Yesterday we went through talking about how some of those wins were very close. Did you earn them or did you just get the W? Now that it's five in a row, can you look at them as contenders, true contenders?
Well, the thing, you can look at them as five in a row, but I think it's important the last two. What they did to Jacksonville was a huge win, and how they were able to build on that, because at some point, are the Texans going to have a formidable defense? And in the last couple of weeks, we can say that. Adam Case, Brock Osweiler, they didn't have the weapons, but they were able to negate them after that first half. That's what you want to be able to see. This team can't play in shootouts. When you have J.J. Watt, you have Clowney, you shouldn't be playing in shootouts. You should be able to limit the offense in what they're trying to do. So I think these last two wins, they are legitimate. There are some teams that started the season, Jenna, they are bad football teams. And I believe that the Texans are in that group. But as you go through the month of October, those teams won't stay bad football teams. Some of those teams will become respectable to good football teams, potential playoff teams. And that's where I think the Texans are right now. They have a chance to be able to fight, to be able to get into the playoffs. You have to like the momentum. But Will Fuller injury, I believe that's a significant injury and is going to affect that offense because of they are, if we're going to have a wide receiving team, we got to have it like a basketball team. So his speed opposite of Nuke's superstar ability, catch radius, I believe that will be missed.
The Texans are now the fifth team in NFL history, start 0-3 and follow that up immediately with a winning streak of five games or longer. The previous four, only one even made the playoffs. Because you dig yourself that hole, your margin of error is not very big, and when you start the year 0-3, there are usually some serious flaws to the team. Go ahead.
Yeah, that you can't overcome. That losing, good teams can lose two in a row, but good teams are not going to lose three in a row, and I think the history, it speaks to that.
And so I think they are contenders for the playoffs. I think they are favorites in their division. But I think right now in the AFC, you have four legitimate contenders and one potential contender. The four legitimate contenders are the Chiefs, the Pats, the Chargers, and the Steelers.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have them in that exact order. The one maybe contender is the Ravens, because the Ravens' defense has been so good this year that if Flacco can get hot in the postseason again, then I'd have to include them. The Texans are a team that should have a home playoff game this year. Probably will end up being, as they have been multiple times in franchise history, underdogs in their home playoff game. And I think their absolute ceiling is the divisional round of the postseason. I think they have too many systemic flaws on the coaching staff and on the offensive line in order for me to consider them. Is this a team? We know they're not going to have a bye. So is this a team that can win three playoff games to get to the Super Bowl, two of those being on the road to get to the Super Bowl? No. So I can't consider them contenders in that light.
So that's what I was going to ask you. What is keeping this Texans team? Is it the offensive line from joining the Chiefs, Pats, Chargers, and Steelers, from the creme of the AFC?
It's their offensive line. It's also been the inconsistency as far as their defense. Their defense has not been dominant. J.J. Watt, you can see he dominated the first half, but sometimes he doesn't have the support. Now, he seems to be healthy. To me, I haven't seen five defensive players that impact the game more than J.J. Watt. So how consistent, not him, but how consistent will the linebacker play? How consistent will the secondary play, which has been questionable at times?
And they yesterday, you saw their two 30-plus-year-old corners leave the game. You saw two injuries in the secondary. We don't know how significant. You saw Clowney hit the injury tent, which has been the only reason this guy has been a perennial All-Pro throughout his career, is nagging injuries from him. Listen, the reason the Texans are not in that echelon right now is they have a ton of cap space, so they could be a team that actually is active at the trade deadline if tries to pick up one of those contracts from a team that's starting to rebuild, whether it's the Giants. Like, if there's significant secondary injury, could Janoris Jenkins find a home with the Texans? So they haven't spent a ton in free agency, and in order to get Deshaun Watson, They had to trade two first-round picks. In order to get rid of Brock Osweiler, they had to trade away a second-round pick.
And so, they're still paying for
right,
that.
Right, so the cupboard is not fully stocked for them. And the other reason is, and last night, give them credit, it didn't bite them. They had been just awful in the red zone. Going into last night's game, this team had kicked 20 field goals and scored 14 touchdowns. Like, going into last night's game...
I saw the graphic, I thought it was a misprint.
Yes.
I was like, man, we messed that one up right there.
And so inside the five-yard line, they had been awful going into last night. So for all those reasons, that you have questions about them you don't have with these other teams. But what you know is they have a quarterback that can go off. Since the beginning of 2017, and Deshaun's only played half the games, since the beginning of 2017, nobody has more 5-touchdown games. Nobody has more 4-touchdown games. And he missed half the season last year. So you know that their offense has the ability to put 40 up on you, even if you don't see it coming. I didn't see that coming last night.
Texans beat the Dolphins. They've now won 5 in a row. Take a break coming up. Have LeBron and the Lakers already found their groove? Next on First Things First. Welcome back. We'll get to LeBron and the Lakers in a second. But first, DeAndre Hopkins. Did you see this? The crazy one-handed catch between the legs. It was called back on offensive pass interference. But what's it called, C?
That was a football nutmeg.
Football nutmeg.
But he did it to himself.
Yeah, he had to. He had to. But the throw was behind him. And because the DB fell down, the ref threw it. They say if you gain an advantage, if he hadn't fallen down, this would have been one of the best catches, most ridiculous catches you ever seen.
Our showrunner, Ketta, says this should count as a touchdown, even though it's not in the end zone. That spectacular of a catch, you should just get 7 points for it. Hey,
Ketta, come into my office and go over stuff with me. Whoa.
What a pinball play in the game last night. Ball gets jarred loose from Jakeem Grant's hands. But Devontae Parker waiting upfield hauls it in.
Reminds you of a famous play, doesn't it, C?
No, I've never
involving
seen it.
Involving the Steelers?
Oh, okay.
One of the most famous plays in NFL history.
Yeah, the immaculate
reception. Immaculate reception right there a little bit. I mean, that went – the reason it pinged up the field is hit off 31's face. I mean, the ball gets – we'll show it again later.
All right, to the NBA now. Jason Tatum with the facial on Paul George.
Oh, yeah, that's what it is. It's called the facial, also called posterizing. That's what it's also, so get some of that sun. It's also,
Listen, Paul George went up for it. Good for him. Paul George tried to stop it. Jason Tatum said these young legs.
Yeah, on this show, we give respect for trying to defend it.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
right.
Put your face in there and get.
I got so mad at my son in high school when he would be like, no, I can't show up on a vine. Man, go try to block somebody.
Pistons, Cavs, Blake Griffin splitting two defenders. Nice spin move with the easy slam.
Hey, shout out to the Cavs. First game all year, they never trailed by 20. Now, they didn't win, but it's a step in the right direction.
Yeah, that's your boy Jetty right there with that gauche defense.
Hey, that ain't Jetty's fault.
No, it's not his fault.
No. Miscommunication on the screen.
Blake Griffin to have some career-high numbers this year. Micah Norai designs their offense.
Nuggets, Lakers, a lot of
Toronto.
Former famous faces in this one. Kobe, Magic, and the young kid, LeBron. Tied game late in the fourth. LeBron on the go throws down the dunk in transition to take the lead. Next possession, it's Lonzo Ball at the top. Step back. Clutch three. Boom. Later in the fourth, LeBron James looking, finds Kyle Kuzma. Kuzma in for the dunk. Kuz would chip in 22 in the night. And LeBron would take over late to put this away. The King finishes with his first triple-double as a Laker. 28 points, 11 boards, 11 assists. Here is LeBron after the game.
Absolutely. I mean, it's my first home win as a Laker, my first triple-double as a Laker. I felt if we didn't get this win tonight, it'd probably take us off national televised games. it's a good win. It's anytime you're able to do, good things individually with that results in wins, that's what's important to me. When it results in a win, I think our crowd has been great, in our home game so far, and they were great again tonight. I guess the first couple games when we fell behind, we stayed behind. We was competitive in all the games. I think tonight we fell behind and we just learned from our mistake. That's the most important thing. I always talk about, the best teacher in life is experience. And we experienced, being up, being down, close games, and then we just fell behind and the game got away from us. Tonight we fell down, I think, 7 at one point in the fourth quarter, and we just didn't let the game get just go away.
Nick, this was a very good win for the Lakers against a very good Denver Nuggets, an unbeaten Denver Nuggets team last night.
A Denver Nuggets team that had been shockingly at the top of the rankings defensively, not shockingly a very good offense, and like you mentioned, undefeated. This is an enormous win for the Lakers. And one of the reasons that, despite what it might do to my mood in our morning meeting, it is important to me to make sure that I'm watching the entirety of these games is you notice things. Like in the fourth quarter last night, credit to Luke Walton for doing something that I thought was categorically insane. He took LeBron out of the game a few minutes into the fourth. Mm-hmm. He takes LeBron out when the Lakers are trailing. The Nuggets, while LeBron's on the bench, extend. He said seven. I think they were down eight at one point in the fourth. And then the Lakers start clawing back, but doesn't put LeBron back in till there's around 4 minutes left. But he did it for a reason. Luke Walton knew, I want LeBron to guard Nikola Jokic down the stretch, so I need him fresh. Jokic is a huge guy and one of the most skilled offensive big men in all of basketball. And what did LeBron do? Well, Jokic, with LeBron on him, well, he had 0 points. In the fourth quarter, he had three turnovers. He totally neutralized him. And that's what allowed the Lakers to come back. I know we'll talk about the triple-double, but having LeBron at the five for those brief moments in the fourth on the Nuggets' best player is what allowed the comeback, along with Lance Stephenson having a tremendous fourth quarter, allowed it to happen. And this was a big win. We are now seeing the Lakers team against tough competition. They've played one bad team. Like, I know the Nuggets last year didn't make the playoffs, but they were in it until game 82, and they are better this year. They've played four good teams. They've been in the games, as LeBron mentioned. LeBron, the free throws blew the game against the Spurs, but a win two nights ago, and then an excellent win last night.
I think it's impressive that the younger players can gain some confidence. LeBron was right. This script was a lot like the other losses, but in the fourth quarter, they were better. Because this game was going back and forth. You mentioned the eight-point lead. The Lakers, their biggest lead was 7 points. So either team, but to see this young team depend on each other defensively to move the ball around and individually. You see Kyle Kuzma hitting shots, moving without the ball. You see LeBron orchestrating the offense, some of it. You see Lonzo hitting a big shot, a step back when they're going to give him that shot. So these little things inside of that win, they make them more impressive. And I believe it's also important as a message with LeBron that they beat some of these playoff teams compared to, oh, we just came up a little bit short.
And I said to you, C, I thought it took LeBron, and this isn't an excuse, I just think it's real, 2.5 games to get into the season. Now, maybe it was nerves, maybe it was the new environment, maybe it was, whatever it was, he didn't look like LeBron until the second half of the Spurs game. So now we can split the season up into 10 quarters. The first 10 quarters and the 10 quarters since then. So let's just show America. First 10 quarters, he did not look like LeBron James. 54 points, 43% from the field, a 17-10 assist to turnover ratio, and a negative plus minus. The 10 quarters since then, 75 points, 52% from the field, a 29-4 assist to turnover ratio, and a positive plus minus. And that's despite not even playing in the fourth quarter against the Suns. Like, LeBron all of a sudden looks like LeBron again, except for the fact he's hit two outside shots, it feels like, all year. He still can't, his jump shot hasn't found him, but he's playing very well the last 2.5 games despite that.
And he's getting help, unlike what happened in Cleveland last night. This is a very well, seemingly well-balanced team. Six players in double figures last night, seven the night before. It feels like if you do take him out, it's not the end of the world. It's not like your opponent is going to just run up on you. And they're a young team, but they are a well-balanced team.
That's something that becomes important, because typically in this situation, LeBron's going to sub out at the beginning of those fourth quarters and then come in typically with like 9 minutes. If they press him, maybe 10 minutes. But I like the fact, and looking at the stat sheet, LeBron only played 34 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, I can't have him playing 38 minutes October.
Right.
Like, so you know what that's going to lead to, especially when you try to get wins later in the season. You know he's going to push it then. So I think the balance of the time, I think the strategy from a Luke Walton standpoint, having LeBron guard the five, the last 4 or 5 minutes of the fourth quarter, becomes important for this young team as they try to gain some confidence going through that very tough Western Conference.
LeBron don't only have to play 34 minutes in a tightly contested game when two of your top seven rotation members are gone. Two of your starters to start the year are not there, mm-hmm. Brandon Ingram and Rajon Rondo, that would never have happened in Cleveland. It never could happen in Cleveland. So certainly not last year, maybe a couple years ago when they had Kyrie and Kevin Love. But, Jenna, right here is a list of offensive rankings in the NBA through this portion of the season. Fourth of the Los Angeles Lakers. As I said all offseason, the offense will take care of itself. Oh, they don't have enough shooting. Oh, okay, guess what? If you're going to run a LeBron-centric offense, you're going to have a top five offense. That's been the case for a decade. The difference the last couple games has been they haven't had the worst defense in basketball. The first few games, they had the worst defense in basketball. The last couple games hadn't been great. They're not locking people down. But if you've got a top five offense, you just need a top 15 defense to go along with it. Now, I'm very curious to see how they get Rondo back in. Lonzo, we talked about Ingram versus Kuzma. Lonzo had big moments last night. Lonzo is more important in the future. Lonzo is a better shooter, even though neither one's a knockdown shooter.
No, absolutely.
What do they do when Rondo's suspension ends, which last night was his final game of his suspension? Ingram's got one more. That's something to watch.
All right, let's take a break. Talk some more football on the other side. Aaron Rodgers has a chance to pull off the biggest upset of his career. That's what he says next on First Things First. Let's finish up with some basketball. The Celtics rallied from a 16-point halftime deficit to beat the winless Thunder 101-95. Kyrie Irving dropping 15 points, 5 assists, but realizes the Celtics aren't exactly clicking 5 games into the season.
Yeah, it just shows you how interconnected this game is. And, you know, when you're not on the same page, then they could look very, very bad. So I think that we would want to err on the side of being one and being together and playing well together. So it's just a lot better basketball that way. But like I said, and it starts with me, too.
Got to be interconnected, Nick. All right, C, are you concerned about the Celtics at all, even though they won last night?
Yeah, but what Kyrie is saying is very, very true. And it's, to me, I saw him in person. Nick and I have been conversating with how good the Celtics can be. We're worried about a couple things. Brad Stevens, with all the talent he has, how does this gel or blend together? How do they get on one page? And your most talented player up until this point was Kyrie, but he might not be after the surgery. It might be Tatum. So now how do they gel? I think Kyrie is going to have the biggest problem of them all because they're taking the ball out of his hands. If they're playing at their absolute best, it's not the style where Kyrie thrives. So I believe that's part of it. In the first half of this game, you could see they weren't in sync. They looked nothing like the Celtics and what we expect from them. Now, this was a nice comeback.
It was a great comeback at the end.
Man, they started shooting the ball, and the three-point ball got them back into this game, but I don't have concerns, but it's just something to watch as far as how they blend together. And Kyrie, I want to be able to watch and see how many dribbles he takes, how many isolation, how does Brad change his overall coaching to adjust to a guy who is very, very ball dominant.
Listen, the Thunder blew this game twice, and we'll talk about it from there and later. But, I mean, the Celtics, 9 threes in the third quarter. Despite that, the Thunder built a 9-point lead with 4.5 minutes left. And the Celtics then went on a 16-1 run to finish the game. So all the credit in the world to the Celtics for finding a way to win, to get a big win for them. But yes, you should be concerned. Gordon Hayward, I'm going to give a lot of time to. Gordon Hayward is coming off a catastrophic injury. And I think it's going to take him time. Go ahead, C.
Yeah, he doesn't have – Jenna was asking me about Gordon Hayward. He doesn't have the overall explosion. Now, you're talking about the significance of his injury. He's back on the court, but you don't see the overall athleticism that he did have. And when he makes body contact with players, especially in the lane, he doesn't have the lift that we're typically used to seeing. So, yes, it's going to take some time.
I saw Paul George suffer this same injury, and I saw him his first month back, and he didn't look like Paul George. But he did eventually. So Gordon Hayward being 1 of 5, 5 points, like, I'm not going to be too concerned about that. But the Kyrie stuff is something to watch. It's the fact that 15 points, 5 assists is a good enough night for Kyrie to get in the headlines. That's noteworthy. And if you watched this game last night, I know that Thursday Night Football was going on at the same time, so a lot of people might have missed this. The Celtics, it's close with 2 minutes left. Kyrie takes a pull-up three and misses it. It's tied with 40 seconds left. Tie game, 40 seconds left. Kyrie gets the ball. Dribble, dribble, dribble right in front of the Celtics bench. You know what Brad Stevens does? timeout. Calls time. The ball's in your best player, theoretically's hands. He knows the time. He knows the score. He knows the situation. This is where Kyrie became Kyrie.
Yes.
It was on the exact spot of the court that he hit the shot over Steph to win the finals. Dribble, dribble, dribble. You know what Brad Stevens says? No, no, no. Timeout. Drew up a play for Marcus Morris. Now, Morris canned the three. It was the biggest shot of the night.
He was hot.
He was hot. They got a 2-for-1 out of it. They end up winning. But that is jarring. Like, the whole reason you wanted to get Kyrie was for those moments. You had the ball in his hand, hit one-on-one, ISO. Nope, that's not the play we want. Mm-hmm. If that's not the play you want, then what's Kyrie's job? He ain't there for his lockdown defense. Mm-hmm. He's not there because he's a brilliant passer. He's there for those moments. The best coach in basketball this side of Greg Popovich saw that moment coming and said, I want to talk it over. That's something to watch for Boston.
All right, let's move on now. A little football. America's game of the week.
Danny
Packers,
Ainge called down.
Rams.
Said he's dribbling too much. Danny called that one.
Smart man, that Danny Ainge. A hobbled Aaron Rodgers has had his team battling to the last second for every win this season, and it won't get easier Sunday when they go to L.A. Only 11 points separating the two teams over their previous 92 meetings. But Aaron Rodgers finds himself as the biggest underdog in his career. Rams favored by 9.5 in this one. CC, what does Aaron have to do? What do the Packers have to do to have any chance to upset the undefeated Rams in this one?
Man, you got to try to get some serious ball control. And I just don't believe conventional that they have that in them. I don't believe the offensive line has enough. At Ohio State, we were taught as an offensive lineman. The coach said, I don't want you to block him. I want you to knock him back. I mean, I don't want you to be playing around dancing when I'm at the line of scrimmage. I'm going to try to treat you some knockback. So the Green Bay Packers, they just don't have it. They don't train the team that way. Can they rush the ball? Yes. For a long period of time, I don't think so against the Rams. The Rams' defense has had some leakage as far as the running game, but to make a living running the ball against Sue and Donald, that's not going to happen, especially with the team doesn't have the mentality. So for me, I got to rely on Aaron Rodgers, the short passing game, the audible passing game, because you have to keep the Rams off the field. If they put that defense out there, if Aaron turns the ball over, if they lose the turnover margin, I believe the Rams will score at least 38 against Green Bay. So does Aaron Rodgers want to get in a shootout with the Rams? No, absolutely not. I believe this is a message game for the Rams, and this is teams they don't play too often. I believe this game can get out of control. Nick thinks the Denver-Kansas City game, but I'm watching this one right here, and the way the teams match up and the momentum that the Rams have, sometimes in the league around the midway section, there's some message games being sent out, and I believe in L.A., that's what they're going to try to do to Aaron Rodgers.
Green Bay's had a week to think about this, an extra week to prepare for this. They came off the big comeback win against San Francisco, a team they shouldn't have had to come back against,
yeah,
but they did.
Yeah, C.J. Beathard, all, yeah.
And then Aaron Rodgers was thinking about this game moments after the game ended. I watched him on the field say it.
What about Coach Mangini say? They don't look at the schedule. They don't look at
him. Aaron knew. Aaron knew. He said he was still wearing his uniform. He's on the field. He said, we got a bye, and then we got to get a few weeks that can really define our season. That some really tough opponents coming up, because they know they got the Rams, Patriots on the road in succession, and then a couple more tough road games a few weeks after that. Here's the key to this game. The Rams never go 3-and-out. They go 3-and-out one in every 12 drives. 8%. That's the fewest, least in football by a wide margin. That is one of the few things the Packers defense is very good at. They force the third most 3-and-outs of any team in football. Got to do that. You got to steal extra possessions that way. Mm-hmm. Because where the Rams are great is they're as balanced as any team in football. They only pass the ball 51% of the time. Think about it, in today's NFL, with those weapons, that quarterback, Sean McVay, they're only passing the ball 51% of the time. That's the second lowest. The Packers, on the other hand, pass it almost 70% of the time, the second highest. The Packers haven't had the ability to have balance because of lack of personnel, but also because they've been trailing a lot. They've had to throw it to come back. The Rams know they've got the best player on their team, the best offensive player on their team at least, is Todd Gurley. You have to find a way to not let him have 35 fantasy points on you. Like, which is what he's doing. Like, everyone, go, no matter what fantasy league you're in right now, the team with Todd Gurley is in first or second place. I guarantee it. Because every week he's got a couple touchdowns. Mm-hmm. Every week he's got 100 yards from scrimmage. And so that is the key to slowing Todd Gurley down. Listen, if Cooks and Kupp beat you,
so easy
so be
to
it.
Say. They don't have the personnel to slow down Todd Gurley.
No one's
been able to yet since.
Nobody might have the personnel to slow down Todd Gurley. But you have to find a way to not let him wreck the game for you.
And also, let's not forget, remember like week number 3? What was that a week of? Desperation.
Mm-hmm.
All right? So Green Bay, a week to think about it. Aaron Rodgers walking off the field in his uniform, thinking about it. Be careful. Now, I believe that the talent and how they play this game can get away. But when teams are desperate, that's when you see the big upsets. That's when you see the surprising results. But the Rams' ability to run the football. Like, they do a lot of things. It's really sexy, a lot of motion, a lot of stuff. But they really want to run the football. Their ability to continue and not have three and outs, I believe, plays in Sean McVay. He's got a photographic memory. And the more plays he can see, the more plays he can mat up his runs with his play-action pass. So, yes, they're going to run the ball. But their play-action pass, I believe, is going to be a big difference in this game.
What does it say about these two teams that the Packers are such tremendous underdogs?
I'm so glad you asked that question, because I was about to answer that question without you even asking. It was the perfect – like, this is – I know it's going to sound like a broken record for me, but it is an abject organizational failure that the Green Bay Packers with a healthy Aaron Rodgers would ever be essentially double-digit underdogs against anyone other than the NFC Pro Bowl team. Like, are you kidding me? You're not ravaged by injuries. This is your team. Like, basically, the team you wanted to go into the season with is the team you have right now in Green Bay. And you are, at the midway point of your season, coming off a bye in a critical game, and the smart guys in the desert say, oh, this team's 9.5 points better than you? Are you kidding me? There's a reason this is the biggest underdog Aaron Rodgers has ever been. Some of it's about the Rams. I get it. A lot of it's about the Rams. But a lot of it's about the players around 12. And that's unfortunate for him.
It's a lot to do with the Rams and the overwhelming confidence. We saw the Rams get into the playoffs last year, get a little bit of experience. We saw all the people that they added. Remember, we talked this offseason. Man, they're so talented. Are they going to have a locker room problem? Vegas realizes this is the best team in football. And regardless, that good team will beat the superstar one player. And I just believe also internally, Vegas has seen some of the back and forth between Aaron, the organization, like the lack of sometimes control or direction of where they're going to go. I believe that the number is right as far as Vegas. These two teams are that far apart at the midway point, basically, in the season.
Wow.
But you're right. It's unfortunate.
I mean, that's an indictment on the organizational structure around Aaron Rodgers.
All right, got to take a break. Coming up, is the Saints-Vikings matchup a revenge game for Drew Brees? That's next on First Things First. Here, First Things First, we're joined by Super Bowl champ Chris Candy. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Jenna. How you doing?
I'm great. It's Friday.
Candy, big day for Candy. Candy's Boston
Every
Red Sox. Day's
really?
Games
we doing
away.
It? We doing
Candy's
that?
Candy's Boston
we're
Red
doing
Sox
that today?
Two games away from World
Listen,
Series.
Just because you predicted the Dodgers to win, don't take that out on me.
Listen,
that's a you problem.
They will,
that's
Chris.
Not on me.
I'm just, yeah, I haven't lost. I said Dodgers in six. The Dodgers, for the half
Yeah,
to
how's that
games,
working out?
They got to lose two games.
Okay.
Thus far, the prediction looks great.
Nick Wright.
What?
Zip it.
Okay. No problem.
Welcome to the show.
Great matchup this weekend, Kenny. Drew Brees in the first place Saints taking on Kirk Cousins in the first place Vikings. A rematch of last season's NFC divisional round matchup. And unless you were living under a rock, you might remember how this one ended. My guy, Case Keenum, finding Stephon Diggs for the 61-yard game-winning touchdown as time expired. A little play that'll forever be remembered as the Minnesota Miracle. But if you ask Drew Brees, vengeance is not on his mind.
This is not a revenge game. There's no, you know, listen, it's a different season. These are new teams, you know, even though there's a lot of similar personnel, it's a new season, it's a new team, it's a new mindset, you know. So, listen, it's a very good opponent that we're playing on Sunday Night Football at their place. It's a tough environment, you know, tough place to play. We understand we're going to need our best game, our best execution to win.
I get all that, and he's saying all the right words. But he was out there and watched this all happen. I got to believe there's some part of the Saints right now that just wants so badly to go out there and win this game.
Well, here's the thing. I don't think it has the same implications as the game they played in the tournament last January. So from that, it's not the same degree in terms of the intensity of the matchup. But when I look at this game, you could be talking about a game that determines who has home field advantage if and when these two teams meet in the tournament this year. So, yes. I mean, that's something that you have to look at. But on the field, how I expect this to play out, it's going to be strength on strength. It's the strength, the identity of the Minnesota Vikings is their defense. The identity of the New Orleans Saints is their offense. So it's how does that matchup play out? Who has the advantage in that matchup? If you look at the Vikings defense this year, it hasn't been the dominant defense that we know from a year ago in terms of total yardage and points. Mm-hmm. But what they have been is opportunistic in terms of being able to take the football away. In their four wins, they've got multiple takeaways.
Yep.
And the three games where they lost or tied, they don't have any takeaways. So this is a group that's dependent on being able to take the football away just because they haven't been whole as a defense. They've had some injuries that they've had to overcome. Sendejo has missed some games. Linval Joseph missed last week. Xavier Rhodes is banged up this week. So, yep. I mean, this is a good week for that Minnesota Vikings defensive front to get Everson Griffin back because they're going to have to put some pressure on Drew Brees if they're going to try to minimize the effectiveness of that Saints passing attack.
Yeah, let's go back to what was the scouting report before they played in the playoffs. We're going to come back to that. The scouting report then was Vikings top five defense. Saints got to be really, really careful with the football. We got to run the ball with the two-headed monster as far as Ingram, Kamara. We're going to be able to do that, but we can't take too many chances offensively against that defense. Now they're playing this year. It's totally different. Defense has shown some leaks. They haven't been consistent pass rushing. They're defensive secondary. So I just believe Sean Payton. Now Drew Brees, he's moved on. But Sean Payton is a guy to keep a grudge. He won't forget.
Oh, yeah.
A memory like an elephant. Mm-hmm. Sean Payton remembers what happened. And he's that kind of guy with that type of personality, that edginess that he takes the field trying to get some of that revenge, realizing this game is really important as far as the Saints' future. The momentum they created, they don't want to be able to lose that in Minneapolis. So the Saints feel like they match up better, and this could be more of a shootout compared to a defensive struggle, which it was in the playoff game.
Last year's playoff game, it wasn't just a wild final play. There were four lead changes in the final 4 minutes of that football game. It was one of the wildest sequences back and forth in the end of the fourth quarter of any playoff game I can remember. But last year's playoff game also had, there's this line of demarcation. The Vikings defense was different the whole season up until the first half of that playoff game and what it's been since then. The second half of the playoff game against the Saints, you started leaking. The next game they played, mm-hmm. they got shredded by Nick Foles, and this year they have not yet fully found their footing. The reason they can be 4-2-1 without the dominant defense they had last year, even if they still have the same personnel, is because their passing attack has been excellent. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think the Vikings have a decided edge this weekend, is it's their strength on the Saints' weakness when it comes to the Vikings passing game against the Saints' pass defense. Saints, I believe, have the 30th-ranked pass defense
now. It's real bad.
Which is surprising because last year with the two rookies, the rookie safety who made the bad play, Marcus Williams, and then we know the rookie, defensive rookie of the year, whose name
I'm forgetting.
Marshawn Lattimore. You thought those two guys would take a step forward in year two. They have not even maintained their level from year one, at least throughout this point of the season. So that's where I think a game in Minnesota that is very important to both teams, but really I think a little more important to Minnesota in this regard. They have no cushion in their division like the mm-hmm. Saints have. I think if Kirk Cousins can play the way he's played the last few weeks, if Adam Thielen can continue on this unreal pace, to me that tips the scales in the Vikings' favor.
So let me get this right. You think it's a good idea for the Vikings to get in a shootout with Drew Brees and the Saints?
I think it's the only way they can win.
Styles make fights.
Here's the one thing I will say. Mike Zimmer called this Saints offense indiscriminate. meaning that they will go after anybody using any of their skill position players at any single time. So I have a hard time believing that this Vikings defense is going to hold Drew Brees in check. This is a different animal than they've gone against the last couple of weeks, going against Josh Rosen in the Arizona Cardinals and Sam Darnold in the New York Jets. This is a completely different offense, and I don't know that these guys are going to be up for that task, particularly with the injuries on the back end. You got to know that Drew Brees is going to go after Xavier Rhodes, and if he doesn't play, he's going to go after his backup. We'll see how they hold up in coverage on the back end. But let's not discount this New Orleans Saints running game, because they can run the football as well. And if they're able to have that kind of balance, it's going to be tough to slow down this offense to keep them from scoring points. And as much as I like Kirk Cousins, I don't trust him to be able to match points with Drew Brees in that Saints offense.
Well, the one consistent offensive weapon the Vikings have had has been Adam Thielen. How do you approach this game? How do you stop a guy like Adam Thielen?
Well, when the guy's in a zone like he's in, seven straight 100-yard games, when you design the game plan, there's a certain quadrant of that game plan is designed on getting him in matchups against this secondary. I don't believe they can cover him. If the Saints play as much man-to-man as they did on Thielen, you can expect him to get another 100-yard game. But I just believe also with the lack of coverage people at their linebacker, watch Cal Rudolph, the tight end. And as soon as you start concentrating too much on them, then you have Stephon Diggs. He ends up having a big game. So their passing the game has led the Vikings this season. The Vikings, since the Purple People Eaters, since then when they were a good team, they were an offensive team, a passing team. And that's what this year's 2018 version is. Regardless of what people want to think, regardless of where else the roster, they are a passing football team, and Adam Thielen is one of the best in the business.
I understand Dalvin Cook's been dinged up and he hasn't looked like what he looked like in his brief stint last year before he hurt his knee. But why do you guys think the Vikings have been so ineffective rushing the football? That they've been very good passing the football, but it's also been out of necessity. They have not been able to find any consistent rushing attack.
It's the injuries up front on the offensive line. I mean, they're missing Eason. I mean, Compton has had some issues. He's been in and out of the lineup. I mean, their offensive line as a whole hasn't been together since the first couple of weeks of the season. So I think that has an effect on the run game. Now, you would think that that would be a liability in terms of being able to protect Kirk Cousins, but that hasn't been the case. And Cousins has been able to manipulate the pocket enough to be efficient in the passing game. But when you look at what Drew Brees is doing this season, 77% completion percentage, it's on pace for right at 5,000 yards, 13 touchdowns, but CC, zero no picks. Interception.
Yeah.
That's why I always give the edge to the Saints if this comes down to whose offense can score the most points in terms of being effective when they have those possessions.
Yeah, a little inconsistency as far as the offensive line. Also, in this new era of lack of practicing, it's hard to develop that continuity. So you have injuries, but the number one reason is lack of talent. The offensive line for the Vikings is an undersized, small, positional offensive line. So they do a decent job in pass protection, but as far as being big and being able to force their will on a defense, they aren't built that way. And Dalvin Cook coming off that knee injury, a lot of players struggle with their hamstrings in trying to re-strengthen that knee. So he's had problems with that hamstring. That's given him more problems than the knee. But that really explains why their offensive line and why they've struggled being able to try to force their will on the defense.
We should mention Vikings tight end Kyle Rudolph will join us coming up in a little bit. Can he stick around? On the other side, Blake Bortles knows he's the scapegoat in Jacksonville, but is it really all his fault? That's next on First Things First. Back here with Chris Kenny, and as the lovely British woman would say, the three and four Eagles and the three and four Jaguars are squaring off
my number
for a spot of American football in London. Neither team playing like last season. With Jacksonville. Jacksonville on a three-game skid. Many people are pointing the finger at the quarterback, Blake Bortles, and no one knows that more than Blake Bortles, who had this to say before being benched in the Texans game last week. I'm totally at peace with that, he said. I totally understand that I'm like the scapegoat for this team. When we play good, the defense played well, the running back did good, the receivers made great plays, and when we play bad, quote, Blake Bortles is the worst quarterback on the face of the planet. And I get it, obviously. That's not what I would have chosen for myself, and I'm sure it'll never stop, but I couldn't care less. I just want to win football games with this team. A lot of reaction on this set. I'm just going to start with your face of perplexity, if I can say. What was your reaction to all that?
I'm so confused.
Yes, you are.
He feels like he's the scapegoat?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that would imply that he didn't do anything wrong and that the team is in this situation because of everything else besides him.
Besides Blake.
Where the reality is that Blake Bortles has turned the football over 8 times in the last 3 games, and they've lost 4 out of their last 5 games, and the offense has scored a grand total of 34 points. So, to me, you have to attribute that to poor quarterback play and the offense not being able to move the football, not being able to sustain drives and capitalize once they get into the red area. But when I look at this team, their formula for success is being able to play really good defense and have great field position. When you have your offense giving extra possessions to the opposing offense, you're not going to have a lot of success. So I feel like the last few weeks we've seen that defense let go of the rope just because they realize the quarterback play has been so bad that they don't have a chance to be competitive in every single game.
But their defense isn't playing that well. Their defense hasn't been playing that well, CeCe.
No, Blake, he's right about that. You're right about that, but let me kind of dissect this as a guy that's done a lot of interviews, interviewed people, and also tried to maybe mislead the media when I felt like it was necessary.
Okay.
This right here is a guy who gave us a little insight in what's going on in that locker room. Forget what the media is saying, because when the media has been saying this about Blake Bortles through his first 4 years, it was fine because he had the support of the organization and his teammates. Man, his teammates are like, man, Blake Bortles is our guy. Man, we're going to win the Super Bowl, man. Duval County, we bring the Super Bowl here. Now them guys cross the locker room, you can start to hear the bickering in his comments, because he said, this ain't going to change. This is what I've been dealing with this locker room ever since I got here. Now, their defense hadn't always been good, but since it's been good, when they play good, it's their fault. I mean, it's their, they get the credit.
Right.
When we don't play good, it's the defense don't play. He said, when I don't play good, the defense don't play good. No, that's recent. So he's starting to share some of the insight to what's going on in this locker room. We've heard a lot of we've heard people that say this locker room is in disarray, that there's bickering going on. Jalen said, we know whose fault it is. Don't nobody want to mention it. So Jalen already called him out. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to be the spokesperson for the team as a defensive back, and it's not the quarterback. So for me, this is a guy whose confidence is fractured. And you think he might get benched in London? Yeah, it's on the board every game that he goes in. So this Jacksonville team is not the team that started the season. This is the one with their quarterback, doesn't have confidence because his own guys have given up their confidence that they did have in him.
You know, see, you make fun of me because sometimes I say I feel badly for this guy or I show sympathy and you say it's pro sports. There's no emotions here. I have no empathy or sympathy for Blake Bortles in this situation. Here's why. If you're a starting NFL quarterback and you are bad year after year, that ends in 2 ways for you. One way is you're no longer a starting NFL quarterback. The other way is, for some reason or another, you get to keep being a starting NFL quarterback and you become a punchline. Guys that get benched because of Blake Bortles' level of play, they don't become punchlines. They're just guys that are no longer starting NFL quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. He has gotten an extended lease on this starting job with no real threat of competition for 5 years. This comes with the territory, man. And this whole, to me, those comments were a lack of responsibility. Again, I try not to assign. I talk for a living. So I shouldn't expect guys who play football for a living to necessarily be able to communicate at the exact level I would say if I were them. Mm-hmm. But you know what I would have said if I were Blake Bortles? Hey, last year I got criticized a lot. Go look at the numbers. Look at our team's record. We had the best defense in football, but I was a big part of why we were good. Mm-hmm. This year I'm being criticized a lot. I'm a big part of the reason we're bad. I need to play better. I thought I'd gotten to a place in my career where I was past it. This year, the last 3 weeks in particular, I've gone right back
to
it.
Who's ever said that?
Quarterbacks that say it like that, because the quarterback position by nature is a leadership position. So you've got to accept some level of accountability for what the team has been doing the last few weeks. You have to. If you're Blake Bortles, you have to recognize.
Yeah, if you don't do it publicly, we know it's done privately. From man to man, as far as our responsibility.
Absolutely. To a man, you got to make sure that you stand in front of your teammates and accept whatever responsibility for not performing well at your job. Because ultimately, we call it a game, but these are these guys' livelihoods. And the defense is looking at this situation and saying, the quarterback has got to give us a chance to have some success this year, and the quarterback has not done that in the last month of football. So, yeah, that's why you have a fractured locker room. That's why you got reports of guys fighting after last week's game. That's because those guys recognize that Blake Bortles doesn't give us a chance. And Blake coming out and making these comments doesn't make things better. It makes things worse.
One thing in the NFL is important, and it's more important at some point than talent, and that's confidence. That's the confidence to know that I'm here for this job and I'm made of the right stuff. Tom Brady, I tell people all the time. It's one of the greatest stories in the history of sports. Bob Kraft drafted him. Tom Brady, the first time he saw him, I'm the baddest dude. It's the best draft pick you ever. Now, as it played out, he ended up being the baddest guy. But if you don't think that, I try to tell guys all the time when they're losing their confidence, man, realize if you went to the bank and you applied for something, a loan, a house, a mortgage, anything like that, they'd ask you your occupation. You know what you tell them? Man, I'm one of the 32 baddest dudes in the world. Well, why are you? I'm one of the starting quarterbacks in the NFL. All these guys got to be a type A personality, a take charge type guy. And that interview, that soundbite, that's everything.
That woe is me
everything
stuff.
But that, man, as a quarterback, I don't expect you to be a killer, but I expect you to have the type of confidence that I can hunt with a bunch of killers. Mm-hmm. Now, I like to use that analogy because that's appropriate to going out into these games. And when your teammates, how can I vouch for you and you're telling me you're not any good? He said that this would never change. It's up to him to change it. Man, what the scouting report on me after 4 or 5 years in the league, let me tell you something. It better change after 10 years. And if Blake Bortles, if he can't change that, you're responsible. I knew Chris Canty as a young player. He wasn't as good as the grown man that I saw that won championships. Absolutely not. Yeah. Why? Because he took it upon himself. A lot of this is based on yourself. You got a great defense. They put a good organization. They can run the ball. They got a very good offensive line. Take advantage to be able to go back and get your confidence back because this is not championship confidence.
And I know that you want to ask us another question. Just one other point on that. There are examples of quarterbacks who have been bad in the beginning of their career and turned it around.
Yes.
Rich Gannon won an MVP. Randall Cunningham, he wasn't bad early in his career, but something happened where he was laying bricks and then came back and won an MVP. There are countless.
Alex Smith, another top five quarterback.
Who was a punchline. That's an even better example, yep. Canny. A guy who was a punchline, then found his footing, had a great moment in the playoffs with San Francisco, then an excellent run in Kansas City. It's not like it's just make-believe that guys can reinvent themselves. Now, we might all think Blake's not going to do it, but the one person in the world that's got to believe he can do
Blake.
It is Blake Bortles.
Man, Tom Brady got tired of giving Belichick credit in this defense and the special teams. Them first two Super Bowls, mm-hmm. when you talk to people who know Tom Brady, right. man, that burned him up.
Mm-hmm.
Man, Belichick tried to tell him to play conservative when he won his first Super Bowl. Drew Bledsoe said, hey, listen, man. Go out there and win the game for us. Don't listen to them. Right,
John Madden was saying play conservative exactly. on the broadcast.
Kenny, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about who the Jaguars are playing this weekend in the Eagles. Is the season on the line for this Eagles team at this point with the way they've been playing and where they currently sit?
I don't think the season's on the line just because nobody in the division is running away from it. But I will say that the Eagles need to have more urgency. I mean, blowing a 17-point lead in the fourth quarter at home, it's not the best look. So going mm-hmm. across the pond, they need to look at this game as a get-right game for them. And I feel like the Jags are going to give them that opportunity.
This is a critical game. They go to 3-5. What are they going to do the second half of the season? Go 7-1? Is this a team we think Doug Peterson can take them to 7-1? No, because you got to be able to get the 10 wins. That's why this is important.
And because who's the division leader, Washington, who they playing? Who they playing, Danny? The Giants. Yeah. The Giants who are, I mean,
they waved the white flag.
They waved
it's
white
over.
Flag. So I'd be shocked if
me,
Washington's
Deontay,
top 5 and
Jenna,
two.
Hub, Ketta. Man, we can beat the Giants this
oh,
week.
Oh, come on.
Now, you're doing the numbers and all the replays
but,
and everything.
But, the Redskins still got to see the Eagles.
Where
just remember
is this
that.
Game
they still got to see
CC?
The Eagles.
Which one?
This Eagles.
Oh, where the sexy lady lives.
In London, of
yes.
course.
Yes.
Why wouldn't it be played there? Yes. Canty, we'll see you a little bit later in the show. Coming up, are
She's
the
hot.
Rockets offering way too much for Jimmy Butler?
She's next hot.
On First Things First. Tonight, it's game 3 of the World Series between the Red Sox and the Dodgers, with Boston up 2-0. Dodgers look to ignite the hometown crowd as the series shifts to L.A. Red Sox-Dodgers game 3 tonight at 7:30 Eastern on Fox and the Fox Sports app. We will get to a crazy NBA trade.
But first, let's talk about this World Series.
We should.
You guys think that the Dodgers are finished. If the Dodgers lose
No, we don't think the Dodgers. Hey, man, don't be trying to make up stuff. Well, Jen and I don't think the World Series. We think it's going to be a great series.
First of all, we're both rooting for seven games. I don't think we're rooting. I would love to see a great series.
For me to be wrong on stuff? What's happening?
It just seems like you always take the wrong end of whatever the conversation is on these sports topics. Nick.
The wrong man.
My middle name is wrong. My last name is right.
It just seems like you're just always wrong about sports. That's the take.
Yeah, and you don't have the overall seasoning of myself. When I make a mistake, I was wrong. Quick, get it out there, and then get on.
And then move on. Yeah. Anyway, it's going to be a great.
Listen, they need Buehler to pitch well tonight.
Yes.
Pitches well tonight, then all of a sudden, Game 4 will determine the series, and so that's where we're at right now.
I'm concerned about the hometown crowd. L.A., man, everything's laid back. Bro, at 4:30, 5 o'clock. L.A. traffic, are the people going to be there?
That's a good
point. The Red Sox at Fenway Park decisive home field advantage in those first two games.
Absolutely. And if the Dodger Stadium can fit a lot more people than Fenway, but because of that, it's almost a worse home field advantage. Because Fenway's so small, feels like the fans are on top of you if you've been in a game there. If you've been in a game at Dodger Stadium, it's so big, it doesn't have the same type of feel. And the 5:08 first pitch in Los Angeles, you ever tried to get to Dodger Stadium? That's a real thing as well. It's a good point.
All right, should be a good one.
It's the World Series. Get there, people. Forget work.
Forget work. Said from CeCe.
Do that
work. Time today. We'll get to a crazy NBA trade in the works in a minute. But first, DeAndre Hopkins making a crazy one-handed catch between the legs. Called back on offensive pass interference, but what a catch.
Maybe the two best catches of DeAndre's career didn't count. There was one when I was there in Houston that happened around midfield where he caught just the tip of the football falling down. This ball never touched the ground. He never lost control of it.
He's been one of the few guys that does a lot of these trick catches and everything in college. It started very, very early, but it transitions over to the game. He's a guy that can do it live action.
Watch the pinball play for the Dolphins. Ball gets jarred loose from Jakeem Grant's hands. Devontae Parker waiting upfield, hauls it.
Devontae Parker has been upset that he's been a healthy scratch. He claims seems to be on the wrong side of the
coach. Well, his agent's been speaking for him. Devontae Parker's been really quiet.
Right, but his agent's been very upset on his behalf. Devontae had a big game last night, one of the few Dolphins with a big game last night, but this was just lucky.
Yeah, I think he needs to get your card, fire his agent, hire the Nick Wright law firm to be able to represent him for future endeavors.
We've got some Devontae's on the staff.
And finally, Lonzo Ball worked on his shot all summer. It's starting to show. Hits Nikola Jokic with a vicious step back three.
Listen, Jokic ain't never been accused of being a great defender. Excellent offensive players held in check a little bit last night. This was an enormous play in the game. Enormous moment in the game, big spot, and huge confidence. You don't see Lonzo with a lot of pull-up threes. A lot of spot-up threes, not a lot of pull-up threes.
I like the fact that 6'5", he created that space to be able to shoot that three.
Mm-hmm.
Big NBA trade rumor going around last night. According to reports, Houston is offering Minnesota 4 future first-round picks for Jimmy Butler. The Rockets are hoping to pair Butler with Harden and Chris Paul in a win-now scenario. Nick, let me ask you, should the T-Wolves take this deal and send Butler to Houston?
To me, for Minnesota, this is a no-brainer. It would be Eric Gordon plus contract filler. My guess is Nene Hilario. My guess is the offer was Eric Gordon plus Nene, along with 4 first-round picks. That's the most you can offer because you're only allowed, according to the Stepien rule, which don't worry about it, but it's just you can only trade picks every other year, and you can only trade picks up to 7 years out. So this is the maximum offer. And because of the Stepien rule, again, you can put almost no protections on these picks. So these could be high lottery picks. Like, this is Daryl Morey collecting all his chips and saying, okay, the whole league's waiting until next year. The whole league's giving the Warriors this championship. We are not. We want to get better right now.
He's also saying in that we want to get better right now, but I believe in the people that we have. I believe in my culture. For the next 3 or 4 years, we're going to be pretty good. These aren't going to be top picks. That's why I'm not concerned about them being restricted or not.
Sure, but the other thing is Jimmy Butler is only under contract for this year. So he's also saying we believe we can re-sign him. And even though we can't be certain we can re-sign him, I know, listen, guys sometimes give wink and nod, yeah, we'll re-sign.
Mm-hmm.
But the player can always renege on that. The teams never can. If a team has a wink and nod agreement, they always have to come through on it or else they'll never get another free agent down the road. But the player can always say, you know what, screw it. Fine, the Houston will hate me. I don't care. So it's risky. And when you're talking about trading 2020 draft pick, you're talking about going all the way up until the 2025 season. Like, you don't know how good this team will be. Chris Paul will be retired by then. So it's Daryl Morey saying, we are all in.
All right, so let's just break it down. How good does he fit into this Houston team as currently constructed?
He makes them better. He gives them some of that defensive toughness. They always want three-point shooting and spacing, but he's not a guy that you have to generate a lot of offense for. You don't have to isolate him. He's good without the basketball. I believe his skill set is so different than Chris Paul and Harden.
Oh, my God.
And he's got that toughness, man, that Chris Paul's being criticized for right now. Him and Jimmy Butler, man, on the same team, that would be good to see. Chris Paul is everything that Jimmy Butler's been complaining about with the young stars in Minnesota.
And if you run a lineup out there of Chris Paul, James Harden, Jimmy Butler, PJ Tucker, and Clint Capella, what you have out there is the best defensive point guard in basketball this side of Ben Simmons and Chris Paul. One of the best wing defenders in the league in Jimmy Butler. One of the most versatile defenders in PJ Tucker. And one of the best rim protectors in Clint Capella. Harden could go back to the Harden defense from 4 years ago that was made famous in all those Vine clips. And it wouldn't matter. Like, this is a we really believe we can win a championship type of offer. I don't think Minnesota can get a better offer. Four first-round picks, the flexibility that offers you if you want to then go acquire another superstar, the ability you can make other teams trade offers if you have four extra first-round picks.
And if Houston's going to go with three superstars, that third one, that guy's got to be a defensive player because you have to realize Harden is not – his defense is not going to get any better. Now, he's gotten – better to where he is, but he's not going to get better defensively. So that third guy has to be a guy that has a skill set that is very similar to Jimmy Butler.
How much does this close the gap with the Warriors, though?
I got to see the Warriors with Boogie. If Boogie is healthy, then nobody can close the gap. But if there's any yeah but with Boogie, then this team was right there with them last year. Mm-hmm. And if you upgrade Eric Gordon to Jimmy Butler, Eric Gordon, who's an offense-only player, that can create some problems. It can create some real problems. And Jimmy Butler, by the way, had all the drama this offseason. See, he came into the year, best player on the team, 25-5-4 a night. Like, he's shown up to play each and every night, playing the best, again, very small sample size, best basketball of his career. I don't know how Minnesota turns this down. Four first-round picks. The Rockets might be regretting this 5 years from now, but they won't care if they're shining their championship ring. I think it's a bold move by Daryl.
All right, got to take a break. Coming up, how dangerous are Deshaun Watson and the Texans after their fifth straight win? That's next on First Things First. Back here with Chris Kenny talking Thursday night football on Fox. Brock Osweiler and the Dolphins taking on his former team, the Texans. What a night for Deshaun Watson. Coming off the lung injury, finding Will Fuller for the 73-yard bomb, his longest touchdown pass of his career. That's the good news. Bad news, Fuller had to leave with what the Texans are calling a torn ACL. This was a one-possession game in the fourth. Watson goes deep. Again, finds DeAndre Hopkins for the 49-yard touchdown. Nuke finished with two scores. Deshaun goes 16 of 20, 239 yards, 5 touchdowns, as they go on to win their fifth straight game. 42-23 was your final. Here's Deshaun Watson after the game.
In this offense, can be very, very explosive. We can, you know, do a lot of good things, put a lot of points on the board. So once, you know, we're all on the same page and everyone's clicking and, you know, we don't have any turnovers and no penalties, we can be very, very explosive. And that's what we showed tonight.
All right, Kenny, does it look like Watson is the Watson?
Looked like he had a lot of diamonds on.
Big icy, Kenny. A lot of ice. There was big tons icy? Of ice in the chest
okay.
area.
We'll go with
so
that.
So icy.
Okay.
All right. Anyway, I don't even know. What do you want to talk about? Does it look like we're seeing the Deshaun Watson that we saw just light it up last year?
It looks like it. I mean, when you looked at him last year in that six-game sample size, the team scored over 30 points a game, and then I felt like they got back to that last night, and you saw the efficiency in the passing game. He had more passing touchdowns than he had completions. But more, incompletions. But more importantly, this is the first time that he's gone back-to-back games without throwing an interception. And I think you can contribute that to the running game, being able to rush the ball for almost 200 yards. Yes. That's a formula for success for any offense. And if the Houston Texans are weak at any spot offensively, it's their offensive line. So running the football, that mitigates that deficiency a little bit. And then the defensive side of things, that group finally starts to look like they're getting healthy. Like, we knew that group had the talent. It's just a matter of, were these guys going to be able to be healthy and on the field at the same time? And it looks like that's starting to round into form. So if things continue to trend the way that they have since that Giants loss, them reeling off 5 wins in a row, then this is going to be a dangerous Houston Texans team once we get to December.
The difference between Deshaun and the Texans as a whole from the first 5-6 weeks of the year and the last 2 weeks has been the ability to keep him upright. There's a reason he had a lung injury. Yeah. And I understand that he was running. I think he actually suffered that specific injury running out, trying to gain yards. But in the first 6 games of the year, he was sacked 25 times in 6 games. 9 turnovers in those 6 games. The 2 games since then, the only 2 impressive wins they've had, not overtime, not Peterman induced, but the dominant win over the Jags and the win last night, he's been sacked a combined 1 time, and he's had 0 turnovers. Like, if they keep him upright, we know what he can do down the field. Now, he's still going to be at times loose with the football as far as interceptions, or you don't have to worry about the fumbles. Like, he's been a touchdown machine in his career. He's played 15 games. He's got 34 touchdown passes. The only guy in NFL history with more through 15 games, Kurt Warner, with the greatest show on turf with the 99 Rams. Like, if you keep him healthy, he's going to make dynamic plays down the field.
How much of that is him, and how much of that is his offensive line clicking and working?
Well, we got to give credit to the offensive line, and you can't give credit to offensive line without giving credit to Bill O'Brien. Their ability to be able to change the game plan to be able to protect Deshaun Watson, it becomes important in Houston. That offensive line is not good. So how do you help them out? Let's roll off the ball, be able to help. They're not really talented, and there's less talent to back up. They're totally different than the Minnesota team. Minnesota does have more talent. They're an undersized offensive line. Their pass protection's been pretty good. Their running effectiveness, it just hadn't been good. So Bill O'Brien's ability to be able to protect this quarterback, don't back him up 35 times, 40 times. No, let's run the ball. When you support them with almost 200 yards rushing, the overall physicality allows that offensive line to play at, it marries up with their defense that played very, very physical as far as their front 7, and it's going to help the quarterback grow. In the Dallas game where he got that injured his lung trying to against Jalen Smith, man, that's not the way we want to see him play. We know we have a quarterback who can do that. I only want to see it every once in a while. I like the game plan and what they did last night for him.
No, you're absolutely right, CeCe. You got to try to protect your quarterback. That's first thing that you think about offensively, no matter what the game plan is. How do we protect our quarterback? And with Deshaun Watson, you've seen the kind of difference that he can make for this team. And so I look at this game plan that Bill O'Brien put together in terms of running the football. That's got to be more their formula for success than what they were doing with Deshaun last year. It's a couple of the things that the Houston Texans offense has struggled with this year, being good on third down, and they've been awful in the red zone. They cleaned that up last night, 50% on third down, and they were 4-for-4 in the red zone. DeAndre Hopkins attributed that to the team not making the mistakes once they get to the scoring area, not having the penalties, not having the things that sets the offense off schedule. So I think this offense is starting to click now, and I think Bill O'Brien is on to something, making the run game the identity of that offense.
So then you look at this Texans team. Can you start looking at them as contenders in the AFC?
I can't. I think they'll win their division. And if you have the opinion that if you make the playoffs, you're by definition a contender, sure. But I think there are 4 teams that are clearly better than them in the conference, and probably 5. Listen, they lost Will Fuller to a torn ACL last night. At least that's what's being reported.
Yeah, that's not going to help their third down, and that's not going to help their red zone.
And it's not going to help DeAndre Hopkins, because it's hard. You always tilt coverage to DeAndre, but when you have a burner like Will Fuller, they spent a high draft pick on, you have to be concerned about him. Now it's very important. Kiki Kuti, who they drafted this offseason, who was out this past week, or last night, I should say, that he comes back. They had injuries in their secondary. Both corners left the game due to injury last night. So why can't I trust them as contenders? I still don't trust Bill O'Brien. I still don't trust the offensive line. And I know the Chiefs, Pats, Steelers, and Chargers are better than them. And I think the Ravens are better than
them. One thing we don't know is how good they're going to get the second half. Sitting there at 5-3, they can get the 11 wins, go 6-2. Now, this division that they're in, they can win this division.
Yep.
Jacksonville, they might leave Blake Bortles in London with the sexy lady. If he does bad over there against Philadelphia this weekend, then that might be his permanent home. We know what's happening in Indy. They're totally rebuilding. So do you trust them more, even though they have some warts? There's other teams out there have warts. And some of these teams are going to get better. We've seen Houston. They got a 4-game winning streak. They have gotten better. Okay. Is this as good as they can be? Or will they improve some more? If they do that, they're in the playoffs. You got Jadeveon Clowney. You got J.J. Watt playing at a high level. Yes, they're a contender. If they get to the playoffs and they improve from here, yes, they're a contender.
What's the stat you gave earlier about teams starting 0-3?
Listen, they're the fifth team now that started 0-3 and ruled off at least a 5-game winning streak. Only one of those previous teams made the playoffs.
98 Bills.
None of them had more than 10 wins. They went 8-8, 9-7, 9-5 in a 14-game season. And then the 10-6, you're correct, 98 Bills. Like, it's one of the reasons you start out 0-3 is usually you're not a great team, and it's such a hole to dig yourself out of. You start out 0-3 and you want to get to 11 wins, yeah. Got to go 11-2 the rest of the way.
Well, they've got a favorable schedule, right? They've got the two road games and the bye week sandwich in between, but then they've got home games against the Titans, the Browns, and the Colts.
Yep.
They got a path to stack some wins.
Back here, first things first, the Celtics and Thunder facing off last night. Boston handing OKC the loss 101-95. The Thunder blew a 16-point first half lead and fall to 0-4. Nick Wright, I got to ask you, how worried should OKC be with their slow start?
I'd put it about a 7 out of 10.
I'd
be concerned.
Nick had some big things for OKC.
Hold on. What are you? I had him 5 seed in the West. I still think that's attainable.
I reveal our private conversation.
Okay, you're unbelievable. Listen, I'd be concerned because the first two games you don't have Russ. Fine. Mm-hmm. Now, the third game, when Russell's back and playing a bad team, that's a bad loss. Game that you were dominating,
ooh,
and you let Boston get back in the third quarter by hitting 9 threes. But then you're dominating the fourth quarter. You're up 94-85 with 4.5 minutes left, and you let Boston go on a 16-1 run. Russ goes 5 of 20, and you guys know how much affection I have for Russ as a player. That was the worst version of Russ last night. He had no shot and didn't care, still shooting them. Pull-up three, bad pull-up jump shot, pull-up three, finally give Paul George a chance. Like, that. No, there should be some concern. And I'm curious why I see Billy Donovan did not learn his lesson from the year he had Kevin Durant with Russ as far as why are you not? They should have 48 minutes a game of either Russ or Paul George on the court. He's playing stints last night with both of them on the bench. I don't get it. And no, I'd be worried if I were them.
There's like 2 or 3 times in the last year and a half, you're like, hey, man, Billy Donovan. I'm like, hey, man, yourself.
It's true.
Like, hey, man, Billy Donovan. Man, they should have. I said, why do you expect so much from him? Like, I know you like Russ and everything, but some of that love you have for Russ and appreciation of his style, you kind of appropriate it to the coach as if this coach is one of the top 5 coaches. Like, why do we keep expecting him to make these type of adjustments? You only have Paul George and Russ. You have to be able to work that out. You can't have all those minutes with both of them. And when Russ goes down this side, where he decides he was in foul trouble, he was just trying to bully people, trying to be physical, that wasn't helping the team. And when he gets it in his mind, he's just going to shoot it. Man, you're at the mercy of whenever he stops, and you hope that he finally hits one because that's where he was last night. I just thought that the lack of overall defense that they decided to play, coming out huge lead in the first half, you give up 40 points to the Celtics.
In the third quarter.
Now, the reason why I thought the Celtics would do well in this game is because I don't think that the OKC matches up well with the Celtics. They have too many wing players for the OKC to be able to deal with, and I thought that that would be the end result. But they played such a great first half. I didn't expect that in the second
and
half.
And then great first 8 minutes of the fourth quarter.
Yes.
Because they were up 14, or 16, pardon me, at halftime. Then they're trailing going into the fourth. But they got their lead almost all the way back. They're up 9 with 4.5 minutes left. Here's the problem. Jenna, what are the bottom 2 names on that list right there?
Celtics and Thunder.
Celtics and Thunder. That's 29th and 30th ranked offenses in the. Sorry,
all I have to glasses. Read on him. My bad,
Jenna. Jenna and I, we're a little older, man.
My apologies. Woo! Let me tell the audience what that list is, though. That's the 29th and 30th ranked offenses in basketball this year. The only reason Boston survived it is they have the number one defense. Oklahoma City, a middling defense, the worst offense in basketball so far this year. That's a recipe for 0-4.
In what could only be called a smooth transition, the Vikings and the Saints play this weekend.
Now, Jenna, this guy can play some basketball. He's been known to posterize a few people.
Yes. Talk about it. The Vikings are on a three-game win streak. They sit alone atop the NFC North in a jam-packed division. One of the reasons for the team's early season success is two-time Pro Bowl tight end Kyle Rudolph. And lucky for us, Kyle is joining us live from Minnesota. Good morning, Kyle.
Good morning. How are you guys?
We are great. It's great to have you. Thanks for getting up and hanging out with us. Let's just get right into it. You guys have been playing really good football lately. What has fueled your three-game win streak, would you say, in your opinion?
I think the biggest thing is just getting back to the type of football that we've come accustomed to over the last few years, which allows us to have success, and that's running the football, not turning the football over, and playing good defense. And I think when you go back and look at the last 3 weeks, we're extremely plus in the turnover margin. We're taking care of the football on offense. We're running the football good again. Then obviously everyone knows about our playmakers on the outside in the wide receiver room, and those guys are always going to make plays. So we don't worry about them on a weekly basis. They're going to go out and do their thing.
Kyle, this offseason, you guys had tried to develop some chemistry with the quarterback. Of course, all the news was Kirk Cousins is coming there. He's got all this guaranteed money. Give me some things that you've learned about Kirk Cousins and trying to develop this chemistry with him that maybe people haven't talked about that you believe makes him a special quarterback.
Well, the biggest thing that sticks out to me getting to know Kirk is just his competitiveness. It's not just on Sundays, you know, this entire offseason, obviously, we practiced against a very good defense. And, you know, they have some of the best playmakers at all three levels on that defense. And, you know, obviously in practice, as you know, CeCe, you get put in some tough situations as an offense because you want to make practice harder than the games. And Kirk hates losing every single situation that we would do in practice against a pretty good defense that was in favorable situations. So I think the biggest thing that I've seen from Kirk over the last few months as we've gotten to know each other and play together is just his competitiveness.
Kyle, Kirk Cousins is playing great. He's playing at a Pro Bowl level. You guys are one of the best passing offenses in the league. I don't want to talk about that. I want to talk about this dead arm dance celebration. I need you to explain it to me. What is this dead arm dance celebration? What secrets can you reveal about it, please?
Well, honestly, I had no idea kind of the origin of it or where it came from. It's just something that Kirk said he wanted to do right before the game, and he wanted it to be on the first touchdown. Latavius scored the first touchdown, and he has his Tay Train dance that he did, so he scrapped the dead arm dance. But then the next touchdown was Adam, and apparently this was a dance that Adam and his college buddies used to do back in the day at Mankato. So I guess he told Kirk about it. Kirk loved it, wanted to implement it. Kirk put his little swag on it, and it has taken the state of Minnesota by storm.
Well, listen, when you can add the swag of a guy from Mankato State to a guy who came up with "you like that," you know you're going to have this type of classic celebration. That was great.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're all for it. You get all the offensive linemen in there just swinging their arms back and forth. It turned out pretty good.
I'm not even sure why everyone's laughing. That's actually how I dance. That's my good dance, Kyle. Like, when I'm really trying to impress people, that's exactly how I go out and dance. Let's talk about Adam Thielen.
Yeah, I'm always good with dances.
Yeah, I feel like you and I would dance great. It would be perfect. Just dead arm all over the place.
Yeah, exactly. Like, if I just have to dead arm, then I'm okay with it.
Hey, Adam Thielen has put together an incredible start to the season, week after week. I mean, he has just been impressing everyone, including the guy who's nearly impossible to impress, which is our Hall of Fame wide receiver guy right here in Chris Carter.
I like him a lot.
He likes him a lot. How much of an advantage is it, Cal, for you getting to line up with him every week?
It's been awesome just to work with him and to see where he's come from. I've been asked that question a lot over the last few weeks. And, what are your early memories of Adam? What was Adam like when he first got on the team to now? And just to see how much he's grown from being a practice squad wide receiver that was playing corner for us at times on the practice squad to being one of the best receivers in football. It's fun to come to work with him every day, and you know, I just try to learn from him and try to see things that he's doing on a daily basis, and just take that, add it to my game, and just really feed off his work ethic.
How much do you think it helps the guys trying to make the team, the guys at the bottom of the roster, to see a guy with Thielen's story who now, a question we were going to ask you is, could he have a 2,000-yard receiving season? Like, do you think that gives those guys almost an added edge as far as no matter where we start with this franchise, we can get to a place where Adam is right now?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, like I just talked about, you know, you look back and see Adam's story and kind of being a guy that was not only undrafted but unsigned and came here as a tryout player and rookie minicamp, which there's only been two guys that have made our team from that tryout, and Adam and Marcus Sherrill. So it's the odds aren't great that you're going to have a spot after that weekend. And then you fast forward 6 years, and you know he's on pace for 2,000 yards in the NFL. So it definitely gives guys throughout our roster hope that, you know, hey, look, if you just worry about getting a little bit better each and every day and not worry about kind of where you fit and if you're going to be on the team, if you're not going to be on the team, and take the approach that Adam took, you never know what can happen.
You're one of the proudest Vikings on and off the field. I've been fortunate enough to know you for a long time, know your family. Make sure you tell your pops I said, what's up? That's where you got your talent.
I will.
And everything got your good looks from your mom and everything. Tell her I said hello, too. But
absolutely.
You've been supported by this Vikings organization. You know some of the stories that aren't even out there publicly. You guys had a coach die this offseason. Last year, you had Coach Zim go through several struggles off the field as far as surgeries and everything. The Vikings, they supported me throughout my career. They made me the man that I was. And that's one thing that you respect. Everson Griffin, he's a guy that's been there almost the same time as you. You guys are one of the most tenured Vikings there. To see one of your friends and one of your brothers struggle the way he did with mental illness and everything, let me know how that affected you and the organization and what they've done to support him to bring him back to team activities, which he joined the team on Wednesday.
Well, I think, as you know and you alluded to, that if there's any organization throughout all of sports that is extremely family-oriented from the top down and they care so much more about just football, it's this organization here. And, you know, we just tried to be there for Everson throughout everything that he was dealing with. And as he stated a few different times, it's so much more than just football. And there's so much more to us as players than just the guys that you see on the field on Sundays. So it's been great to have him back at practice this week. Everson is not only a phenomenal pass rusher, but he's a guy that brings a smile and it just exudes energy each and every day at practice and in the locker room. So it's been awesome to have Everson back. And, you know, I told him when I saw him that it hasn't been the same without him around the facility. You know, you're so used to hearing someone with this, you know, extremely high-pitched laugh and, you know, always cracking jokes. So it's been good to have him back around the building.
That's really great. All right, let's move on to this Sunday. You guys are going to play the Saints. Last year, in the playoff game, a little something called the Minnesota Miracle happened. We heard from Drew Brees earlier in our show who said there's no vengeance here. There's no revenge factor as the Saints come into this game. But I have to imagine you guys take a little bit of what happened last year into Sunday. How much of that do you carry with you when you get ready to face this team again?
Well, I think the biggest thing, and, you know, obviously it's a question that we've been asked about a lot this week, and people keep asking if it's something that, you know, you get tired of talking about or are tired of being asked about. And, you know, my answer to that question was just, you know, I would hate to be in their shoes. You know, they're obviously getting asked about it as well. And for us, we were on the right side of the play. We very easily could have been on the other side of the play and be dealing with those questions that they're dealing with. So it's been good to be on the positive side of that play and being asked questions about it, being able to kind of relive that memory a little bit that was so great and obviously one of the best memories in our franchise's history. But with that being said, you know, that play and that game has nothing to do with the 2018 Minnesota Vikings playing the 2018 New Orleans Saints. So they got a really, really good football team, and they're playing well. They won five straight, so it'll be a good test for us on Sunday.
Your guys' season, of course, obviously didn't end the way you would have hoped. It was a game Chris and I were at. It looked like you guys were in control of, and then all of a sudden, 5 minutes later, I've never heard a stadium louder. The Link's on fire, and your guys' season is approaching its end. What are the biggest adjustments you feel this team has made this year to go a step or two further in the postseason?
Well, I think, you know, for us as a team, as I alluded to early in our interview, was just learning what allows us to win football games and knowing the type of football that we need to play to be successful. And, you know, we had a game earlier this year where we just, you know, went out, tried to roll the ball out and got beat on a game that on paper we should win. So I think the biggest thing that we've learned and, you know, been able to grow from early in the season, the way the last season ended, was just the style of football that we have to play. And, you know, hopefully that the way the season ended last year has put a chip on our shoulder, giving us motivation throughout the offseason to not only get back to where we were last year, but take that next step.
Kyle, I want to ask you about something you're doing off the field. You do such great work, and I'm not sure a lot of people even know about it, at the University of Minnesota Children's Hospital, a program that's called the End Zone Program. Tell us a little bit about the work that you and your wife do there.
Well, we've been extremely fortunate to have a relationship with the University of Minnesota Masonic Children's Hospital, and it's a relationship that the Vikings have had well before I even got here. I was fortunate to have older teammates when I got here who showed me what it means to be a extremely dedicated man off the field in the community, to make the Twin Cities community, which is now home for my wife Jordan and I, a better place than when we got here. And we just wanted to provide a space for the patients and families at that hospital that, you know, when they're there for an extended period of time, all these kids want to do is be kids. And unfortunately, their disease or their illness has taken their childhood away from them. And, you know, I always tell people that cancer, disease, illness, it doesn't discriminate. You know, every single person's life has been affected by it in one way or another. So we just try to do it a little bit that we can to make their time while they're at the hospital a little bit more enjoyable.
It's awesome. It is. It's obviously more important than anything you'll ever do on the football field, and it's a great thing you do in the Minneapolis community that Chris has told us a lot about. Another thing Chris has told us a lot about is his high school basketball career. You'd think this guy, I mean, to this day, he thinks, oh, I'd have been in the NBA like my brother. I'd have done this. You had a very distinguished, yeah, see, he ain't denying it. You had a very distinguished high school basketball career. I think 3-time conference player of the year. Mm-hmm. You've been great in the NFL. You're team captain, you're a Pro Bowler. You also see Andrew Wiggins across the street from you. That's $150 million. Carl Anthony Towns, he's probably looking at about $200 million. You ever wish, like, you ever have a what if I would have stuck with basketball moment that ever crossed your mind?
Every day. No, I'm kidding. I am a basketball player at heart. It's a game that I loved, you know, growing up, obviously playing both football and basketball. And, you know, I joke around with people all the time, you know, go back to my 16-year-old self when I was sitting down with Coach Tressel at CC's alma mater. And, you know, my first 2 years of high school, I was pretty much set on going and playing basketball in college. I was getting recruited to play basketball in college. And the recruiting process for football was just getting started. And Coach Tressel sat me down in his office and said, I heard you're a basketball player. And, I said, yes, sir. You know, I love football. I enjoy it. Obviously, I'm at camp here having fun with my buddies from high school. But I think I want to do this basketball thing. And he's like, well, you know, maybe you should think about football. You might be able to do it for a living one day. And from that point on, I kind of shifted my thought process and what I wanted to do and ended up obviously choosing football. But I go to as many Timberwolves games as I can. I try to play pickup with those guys from time to time. Carl is a great friend of mine. So I still try to get my fix when I can. And, of course, I think I could still play. I mean, who wouldn't? What good competitor wouldn't think that they could still play? So if the Timberwolves need me from, you know, mid-February for the playoff push, I'm always available.
Yes. Awesome.
If they have another lockout, he's available.
Absolutely. That's great. They might be, especially they might make a trade. They might need some big men help. So there you go. Yeah. I like that.
That was before Urban Meyer got to Ohio State. We utilize our tight ends now. He would have come to Ohio, but he went to Golden Domer. Okay.
Yeah.
Kyle, thank you so much for hanging out with us and for making our dance, that dead man dance, just cool again. God. Much appreciated. Good luck Sunday against the Saints. When you're in New York, come stop by the show. Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts,
and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.